Thanks to Slack for supporting the Productivity Show. Slack is a collaboration hub for work that makes sure the right people in your team are always in the loop and key information is always at their fingertips. Learn more at slack.com. Welcome to the Productivity Show, the Asian Efficiency Podcast dedicated to helping you make the most of your time, attention, energy, and focus. You're listening to the 200th episode of the Productivity Show, which is a major milestone for us. 3 years and almost 5 million downloads after we launched, we're still going strong and helping people like you achieve your goals in record time with our actionable content. To celebrate this special occasion, we want to reveal something that we use at Asian Efficiency, which we've never done before, an inside look at our planning process that we use at the company. Whether you're an entrepreneur, a team leader, or someone who wants to learn how to plan their goals in a little bit different way, in today's episode, we're going to share how we plan our goals for the year and how we try to achieve them. We'll talk about which mistakes we've made along the way, share how we've sometimes failed at hitting our targets, and what we've learned that helps us execute better the more we stick with this process. You can find links to everything that we share in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/200. And now, on with the show. Hey everyone, this is Mike Schmitz, and I got a super special treat for you today because I am actually joined by Mr. Tan Pham and Mr. Brooks Duncan. So we decided to get the whole gang together for this special episode on how we do our quarterly planning. Also our 200th episode, which is a bit of a milestone. Tan, did you ever think we'd get to 200 episodes when we started this all those years ago?
I kind of assumed that we would get to 1,000, so I'm just happy that we're at 200 right now.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I wasn't quite as optimistic as you were. Brooks, good to see you. What's your opinion on the podcast? Did you see us getting this far, almost 5 million downloads when we started this thing?
I thought my first episode back in episode 6 or whatever it was, I thought that one would get 5 million episodes. So we're just catching up now.
Yeah, maybe that's the reason that we were so successful is that we had you on the show. I think it was episode 7. So yeah, you kind of kicked this off.
I think that's what I'm going with anyway. Yeah.
All right. So we're done with the navel gazing for now, but this is our 200th episode, and we are pretty proud of everything that we have created here. We've helped a lot of people. We've got almost, at the time of this recording, 5 million downloads total. That's a whole lot of people that we have helped to maximize their focus, their attention, their energy, and achieve their goals faster than they thought possible. For this episode, what we want to do is we want to dive into how we do this at Asian Efficiency. So Tan, the CEO of Asian Efficiency, this is really great having you on here because I've been with the company for a while and I can provide some context to the way things have changed. But you've been here from the very beginning, so you've seen the entire process.
Yeah, when it comes to planning your goals and actually achieving them, it's a very interesting process because over the years, we've tried different things, whether that was on a personal level, whether that was on a business level, a company level. And I thought today would be a good episode because we have all three of us here. All of us are involved every quarter when it comes to setting goals and achieving them and executing on the mission. And this is something we've rarely talked about, but I think there's a lot of frameworks and concepts that we can discuss today and really share with our audience because I know we have a lot of listeners who are either executives or team leaders, or they manage departments, or they have their own business. And when it comes to achieving a company goal, in the beginning, I thought, oh, this is going to be kind of the same thing as you do for your personal life. But then as we kind of went through the whole process over multiple years, every single quarter, you start to realize, actually, yes, there's a lot of overlap, but there's also subtle differences you have to be aware of. And I thought today would be a good topic to talk about that.
Yeah, sounds great. And it's cool that, like I said, the three of us are on this particular episode because when we do our quarterly planning, it is usually the three of us. And so you're going to get basically every single perspective from the quarterly plannings in this episode. And like you said, Tan, you can definitely take aspects of this and apply it to different arenas. I know I've come back home from quarterly planning and tell my wife, you know, we did this thing and it was really cool. We should really implement it this way in our family or a different team or organization that we're involved with, like our church. There is definitely some general concepts that we're going to cover here. And I think that's going to make it more approachable for just about anybody who is listening to this episode. There's going to be something here that you can apply for yourself. But we're going to talk about it, like you said, kind of from the business perspective. Do you want to explain the process that we use when we do our quarterly planning, and we'll kind of go from there?
Yeah, let's dive in right now. And to provide some context, I think it would be helpful if I could explain kind of the progression of Asian efficiency, because then you'll start to understand why we chose a certain methodology, why we went a certain path. So we started in 2011, January 1st, 2011. This is almost like 7.5 years ago now. It's crazy just to think about it. But it was just me and Aaron starting it off, and it was just two dudes trying to share some knowledge about productivity and helping people become more efficient. And then over time, we started to attract a large audience, and this audience wanted more content from us. And so we started hiring more people. And in the beginning, it was just me and Aaron having conversations and saying, hey, you know, it would be great if we could do this or achieve this. And it was never meant to be a business. It was just a really big passion project. And then as we started to get more serious and people wanted more stuff from us, we turned it into a business. And then we said, okay, we need to mature and actually figure this out. So we started hiring people and bringing people on board. And then as you start to introduce new processes and people to the company, you also have to keep into account then all the resources that are available to you, right? So in the beginning, I'm kind of aware of what I can do. I'm kind of aware what Aaron could do. But then as you start to introduce more people, this becomes more complex, right? And the complexity always increases as you involve more people. And as we start to grow and grow and grow, our planning process also had to change. In the beginning, it was just me and Aaron getting on Skype and talking about what we wanted to do next week and the week after that, and that was fine. And then as we started to grow and added more people to the team, we said, oh, we should probably talk every single week and see if we can get maybe like a monthly goal or something, or even an annual goal. And so we tried that and we failed miserably most of the time. And we said, okay, we needed something that we could keep track of and kind of measure, because we knew from our personal lives, measurement is everything. So if you've read our articles on time tracking or like agile results, you kind of know that we like to track and be numbers driven, right? Which is one of the reasons that core value was so inherent early on. But nowadays it's kind of not, but it was very early on an important thing for us. And so long story short, we've found out that Scrum was something that really resonated with us. It wasn't something that's was necessarily for planning purposes, but we like the idea of, hey, you know what? We have a certain outcome that we would like to have, and we just need to iterate every single week or every 2 weeks to kind of figure out how we can get to that goal, right? And if you've listened to our Scrum episodes, you understand that Scrum is all about iterations. Like you're working towards something, you're trying to make adjustments as you go. And that kind of philosophy really resonated with us. So as the company started to grow even more, we had to become even more serious about it and then figure out, okay, how do we put financial measurements in place as well? Like, how do we tie this to a financial goal so we can grow the company and so on? And then I stumbled upon scaling up. So scaling up is kind of a framework. And if you could go to scalingup.com, you can kind of read about it. There's a good book about it as well, started by Vern Harnish, who also founded EO, Entrepreneurs Organization. And there's tons of business frameworks out there like Traction and Four Disciplines of Execution, 4D. And there's a bunch of others out there that are great. But scaling up kind of resonated the most with me because I think it really complements Scrum. And so when you think about Scrum, the execution part of it, and then scaling up the planning process part of it, if you combine those together, it's really powerful. And that's kind of like how we stumbled upon this whole process. And to this day, we're still learning. You know, it's not like we have everything figured out, but that's kind of like how we got started and really just through trial and error, just figure it out. And nowadays we just use that framework.
It's true that what you say about it being really powerful merging those two together, because I came as you guys know, I came to the planning process later than you. It was already, the rhythm was pretty much established when I joined the team. And I had come from a corporate background where you sit around in a lot of meetings and you even sit around in a lot of planning meetings and everyone talks about this and that. And then everyone just goes back to their desk and does what they were going to be doing anyway. So my first planning meeting where we went through this whole process, I had been with AE 3 months. I think it was my third month when I came down. And yeah, it was quite remarkable going through the process, figuring out what we're going to do. And then all of a sudden we go back and execute what we talked about. And that was a real eye opener for me, like showing the value of this process that we're going to go through today, that this is not just about planning, it's also about leading into giving you something that you can execute.
Yeah, and I want to go back to something that you mentioned, Tan, at the beginning of that last section. You kind of mentioned that you started Asian Efficiency not really with the intention of it becoming a business. It was kind of like an accidental business. And I'm curious, like it's cool, I guess, from my perspective, that you made that transition from being really an individual, or even if it was the two of you who were blogging about this stuff and creating these things, to a team-based productivity company. I think that's kind of unique in our industry. There's a lot of people who have figured this out, and they'll share things from one perspective. But I know there's a bunch of challenges that come with growing a company and getting more people involved. And now all of a sudden you're not the face of the franchise anymore, but you're getting some benefit from that too, because you've got different people, different backgrounds, different perspectives who can give you a more complete solution. I'm curious though, what was the hardest thing you experienced when you went from like just you and Aaron to, okay, we're going to hire some more people, we're going to develop a team?
It was actually a very easy decision for me, because I've always been the person behind the scenes for the most part, and blogging about productivity and growing that side of Asian Efficiency was kind of a necessary evil to do in terms of putting myself out there. But it was very easy in the sense that, you know what, I'm actually very passionate about this stuff. This is stuff that I live and breathe, so it's very easy to me. And I remember having this conversation with Aaron, and we said, hey, you know what? If we want to become one of the leading industry people or the thought leaders or the company that everybody goes to, we can't do it ourselves. We have to bring other people in. And we also realized, you know what? The way you and I do things are very similar, which I think was great, because the synergy and the content that we created and the ideas and methodologies we created was very unique and fresh in the space. But we also knew that, hey, you know what? I'm a single guy. There's so many things that I can talk about, but there's also so many things I cannot talk about, right? And so I knew that I wanted to bring on other people on the team that could provide similar views, but in a different way. So as long as we share the same values and we look at things very similarly, we can talk about things and teach things in different ways. So this is something I've obviously never shared, even with you, Mike, I think in person. But one of the things that really drew me to say, hey, we need to have you on the team is, you know, not only was your writing great and your insights and you were, you know, obsessed about productivity in a way as well, but you also came from kind of like a religious background. You have at that time like 4 children, all young, and you share the same values. So it was like we had a lot of overlap, but also a lot of differences. And I think that's the one thing I said to myself, hey, you know what? If we have Mike on board, we can provide a lot of value and context and teach things that I couldn't teach. And also some things would just resonate better with our audience, because I knew from just doing all these calls and talking to people and meeting people in person, certain challenges that they were having was, you know, with their children or planning with their significant other. And these are things I could just never relate to, right? And so when I saw the opportunity to say, hey, we need to bring Mike on board, I went straight on it. Pretty much it was history.
That's cool. My obsessiveness is our competitive advantage.
Exactly. And the same thing happened with Brooks. Like Brooks and I have been talking actually for many years. I think I think we met in Portland and I kind of brought it up in 2013, 2014 or something.
Yeah, something like that.
And so it took about three and a half years or so to convince Brooks to join the team. But already back then, I already knew like, hey, we need to have somebody else on board to kind of help us grow. Because we just can't do it ourselves, no matter how much of a superhero complex entrepreneurs tend to have. I think it adds a lot of value, and also it makes us different from everybody else in the industry because we have multiple experts. We provide different context perspectives that people can relate to and also learn from.
But along with that, there's a very big challenge because when you are just going solo, you don't have to have clearly articulated the entire vision for where you're going because it doesn't really matter. You can do whatever you want. You don't have people who you're working with who need to run with you in a specified direction. So I think that that's one of the big things that I've learned from this process is like it's really important that you get everybody on the same page pulling in the same direction, which kind of leads into our next point here. When you're doing this quarterly planning, obviously that's the goal. You want to get the entire team bought in and moving in a specific direction. And Tan, you even shared during one of our meetings last week, you expected us to, I forget the exact terminology you used, but like disagree and commit or something like that, which I thought was a really interesting way of viewing that. Can you explain that real quickly before we jump into the in-person versus virtual?
Yeah, so we just had a team training, I believe last week, and this is a concept that I've been hearing about over the last 2 years or so, and since we have this monthly training that we do and biweekly training as well, I thought I would bring it up with you guys, and it's the whole idea of disagree and commit, and this is something that Jeff Bezos of Amazon is really well known for, and is actually part of their values as well. And part of their values is to have a backbone. And he explains that we're going to have to disagree and commit at some point. And we have to be fully committed to doing that if we want to be successful at what we do. So the whole idea is, okay, as a company, we want to grow, we want to achieve, but we might have different opinions of how we're going to get there. And different people on different teams and different executives can all have different opinions. But at the end of the day, Jeff Bezos is still going to make a decision, right? And he says, you know what? I want to make sure I hear you out. I want to make sure I hear your viewpoints, your arguments, why my idea could fail, why your idea could succeed, and vice versa. But at the end of the day, I'm going to make that decision. And if I make that decision, we can disagree, but I would still like you to commit to it. So even if we disagree on the vision of where we're going to go and how we're going to do it, we can disagree on that, but I still need you to commit to this idea. And the other way applies too. I might say, hey, Mike, I don't know if this is a good idea. I think my idea is better, but you know what? I'm going to disagree and I'm going to say, I'm going to commit to your vision. And this is how we're going to do it this quarter, right? So at the end of the day, I still make the decision as the sort of head of the company or Jeff Bezos, but there will be circumstances where you and I and others on the team will have to disagree on some stuff. Like we just can never always have harmony. But if we disagree, we can still commit to the outcome of it. And if we don't have the commitments, then nothing will work, right? So I kind of wanted to preempt that and say, hey, you know, there will be times like up to this point, everybody has been in agreement pretty much with what we're trying to do. And the vision is very clear, but also I know for a fact, and this is part of just being an operational person in general, is like you try to identify any potential roadblock that comes up in the future. And one of the roadblocks from, you know, thinking time came up was, you know, what happens if we disagree on what we're going to do next quarter? What happens then? You know, are we going to have unhappy people? Are we going to have uncommitted people? And we can't have that. Otherwise, you know, we're not going to succeed at what we do. And so if everybody agrees on the concept of disagree and commit, then it makes it a lot easier when we have that conversation.
Yeah. And I think that it's important. Like I'll just share one example I can think of where you maybe didn't agree, but you committed. And that was when we launched this podcast. Now, this wasn't specifically my idea. You know, Zach and I were the ones who were working on this, but you've shared on the podcast before how you basically did it to make us happy. So
yeah,
from
exactly.
a business perspective, you probably didn't agree with all the effort that we were pumping into this thing, at least at the beginning, to get it off the ground. But you were committed. And I think that this is where, you know, we're talking about in-person versus virtual. This is where in-person, really, you can't beat it, because there's a whole lot more that's going on than just the words that you are saying. And when you get in the same room with people, you can communicate on a much deeper level than you can using technology. At least that's my own personal opinion, even with the video tools that we have available to us today. You know, we've got a monthly video call that we use Zoom for, and it's not the same as physically being in the same place every quarter when we do our quarterly planning.
I completely agree. And we've actually tried to do planning over Skype and to just communicate through Confluence in the beginning, but it was just very difficult. And also at that time, Aaron was living in Thailand and I was here in the States. And then one of us had to fly over there, which was kind of a trek, because flying from, at least at that time when I was living in Los Angeles, it would be kind of like a 24-hour trip to get there. And then you have to, you know, kind of recover from traveling and then plan and then execute. And we tried to do it over Skype to save money, but then that wasn't as super effective. So we just at some point agreed and said, hey, you know what? We need to do this in person. And ever since then, it's just night and day in terms of coming to an agreement, coming to decisions, and actually being on the same page. And I know I love having Brooks flying in every single time, because I always ask him to bring ice wine, because it's the one thing I cannot get here in America. And he's the only person who can give it to me.
and I like flying in because Austin has the breakfast tacos that I crave. So it all works out.
Now, Brooks, I'm curious to get your perspective on this, because you are fairly new to the Asian Efficiency team. When you think about how much it costs for, like, if we're going to go down to Austin, which is typically what we've done, you know, I'm flying from Wisconsin. Tan's just got to walk out his door, but you're coming from Canada. This is not inexpensive to get all of us in the same location. But what is the biggest benefit you've noticed from being a part of this quarterly planning? Like, what's the thing that's really stood out to you or has most impressed you about physically being in the same place?
Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, it was that transition from planning to knowing when the planning sessions go well, which they typically do. When we walk out of there and I'm heading back to the airport, I know exactly what I need to do and other members of the team need to do. We have a lot of times we even have all of the tasks groomed and ready to start rolling once we get back. And that, I think, is something that is just a lot easier when you have everybody huddled in the same room. You've got the day or multiple days set aside for it. So you're not trying to, you know, have a little bit of a meeting and then go off and do your own thing and then have another, you know, let's reconvene after lunch. It's like we're all huddled there in the around the same table going on the same goal. And that's been really, really powerful. I didn't know what to expect when I was coming to the first one. But I was thoroughly impressed when I finished that first time.
Yeah, one of the things that kind of surprises me is how we've gotten more efficient with this process, which we're going to get into the actual process here in just a second. But the first time we did it, we filled out a whole bunch of those worksheets, and a lot of that stuff has remained consistent. So that's saved us some time. But typically, you know, we'll fly in on a Tuesday, we'll plan all day Wednesday, and then we'll fly home on a Thursday. So we're really together for a little more than 24 hours, but it's amazing how much we can get done in that truncated time period when we're focused on, okay, we're going to figure out what we're going to do this particular quarter. Now, Tan, you've got some stuff here in the next section about the direction that's provided when we do that. Maybe this would be a good place to talk about beginning with the end in mind.
Yeah. So when it comes to the process, it's very similar to how you set your own goals. And it's the whole idea of, okay, let's begin with the end in mind and then work backwards and trying to figure out what the starting point is right now that we can start off from and then execute from there, Right? So if I had to break down the process, it would look something like, in very simplified terms, come up with a goal, whether that's a 5-year goal, an annual goal, 10-year goal, 25-year goal. I think for most people, an annual goal is a good starting point. And then from there, say, okay, how can we break this down into quarterly periods? So every single quarter, we're going to execute something, and then we get one step closer to the annual goal, right? And every time the quarter ends, we want to revisit where our progress, where we are right now, and how far or how close are we to the goal, and what kind of adjustments do we need to make to get to the annual goal. And that's really the simplified process. And if you've been following us for a while, it sounds very similar to a lot of things you probably studied at some point, whether that is a 12-week year, whether that's some other productivity system, not really GTD, because GTD is more like low-level task, like executing on that sense. But like when it comes to planning, it's very similar in that sense, right? And so when the planning process gets started at AE, especially when it's quarter four already, so towards the end of the year, we want to start looking towards the next year and say, okay, what are some of the goals that we can consider? And we kind of have a roadmap for the next 3 to 5 years already. And what kind of adjustments do we need to make in that sense? And the thing I always like to ask myself is, when it comes to setting an annual goal, is, okay, what's the one thing, right? If you've read the book, The One Thing, you know it's all about just laser focusing on one thing. And it sounds so simple in theory, but it's actually very difficult to execute in the real world. And I can share many stories, and all of us can share many stories of how we failed miserably of really following that piece of advice. But what's the one thing that you could do this year that would change everything for your business or for your life, or that would be a game changer? And there'll be many options. There'll be a lot of things you can choose from, but you want to focus in on one thing and then be laser focused on that. And then from there, that's when the planning process kind of gets started, because it can take you actually multiple weeks to figure out what your one thing is going to be. I need to talk to Mike to figure out if this is a good idea. I need to talk to Brooks if he's in agreement. I need to talk to other people on the team. I need to talk to people outside of Asian Efficiency and consider their advice and perspective as well. So it can actually take a couple of weeks or a couple of months to really fine tune what that 1 year vision is going to look like. And I think that's the benefit of having multiple people on the team as well, because there are many times when I maybe think I have a brilliant idea, but then you guys shoot it down and say, Tan, that is a terrible idea. Why would you do that? Like, don't do that at all.
Yeah. I'm thinking of specifically like the quarter that we're in. It applies to this right here, because you talked about like, what's the one thing? Like, a lot of times we don't realize what the one thing is. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that people can make. One of the mistakes that we've made, and we've learned from it. You know, we're going to continue to try and refine this process. And in my opinion, we seem to do a little bit better with it every time we get together for quarterly planning. But we had a couple different goals that we were shooting for this quarter. And then we realized right after it started, really, that, you know, this one right here, this really isn't driving the critical number, which is the next thing we're going to talk about. This really isn't in line with the one goal. So maybe it's not that important. And I know, Shatan, you've shared, at least internally, that like we've done that before, where we've fragmented and we've had all these big rocks according to the scaling up framework, which is great to have multiple rocks if you've got multiple teams and like a huge number of people that you can devote to this stuff. But we're a pretty small team. We know what our critical number is. There's one thing that is really going to make a difference for the future of Asian Efficiency. And so at that point, you know, everything else that's not in line with that is really a distraction.
Yeah, because it's so true that you said that coming up with the one thing sounds easy, but is difficult, because it's so hard to not let the things you want to do, or even the things you know you should do, kind of infect or like get in there. You know, you have your one thing and you're like, oh, but you know, we can do this at the same time. It won't be too bad. And all of a sudden your focus is getting split. So it's really, really difficult to actually stand up against these other really awesome ideas that you should be working on. And maybe even you think you could work on.
And as people, we are over optimistic when it comes to what we can do. We tend to assume that we can do all these things. And then we have this counterintuitive advice that says, actually, you should only do one thing. And your brain goes, but no, I want to do all these other things as well. Like, I know if I do X, Y, and Z, this is going to help. And this is helping us go to the next level. And that could be true. But then you don't take into account your resources, your focus, how much time you have available. And that's the one thing we also had trouble with was, okay, if we're really committed to the one thing and doing all these like little miscellaneous things around that aren't necessarily in alignment, we didn't know, like, did we have the time, the resources, the availability, the skills, the tools, the knowledge? Did we have all of that in place to actually execute what we needed to do? And that requires like another level of thinking and planning to say, okay, what are some of the things that are missing? And so if you compare the planning process, let's say 3 years ago to now, you know, we're still getting better at it, and it's an ever growing process that's always going to be fine tuned. And like you said, Mike, you know, right now we can do most things in 24 hours. In the beginning, it was literally somebody shows up Monday night and they don't leave until Thursday. So it was kind of a long process. And now we got it down. And we can combine certain things, like doing certain things online, have a discussion about that. And then by the time we get in person, we only want to do things that we can only do in person. So it's an ever-growing process.
Slack is a collaboration hub for work, whatever work you do. With Slack, the right people in your team are kept in the loop, and the information they need is always at their fingertips. Teamwork on Slack happens in channels, letting you organize conversations and information around projects, offices, and teams. And because everything you need to work on is in one place, it's faster and easier to get things done. With Slack, your team is better connected. Find out more at slack.com. I love Slack and use it every day because it's a great way to stay connected with everyone on your team. Whether you have a physical office or are part of a remote team, Slack makes staying in touch with others in your organization much, much easier. In fact, we use Slack here at Asian Efficiency to connect the members of the Dojo, our online productivity community. We have members all over the world, but Slack allows us to stay connected in real time on any device. We even record these podcast episodes on Slack, and the community joins us in a private podcast channel where the conversation happens live. If you're still using email to communicate with your team, trust me, Slack is so much better. But Slack also has a bunch of awesome features and integrations to make your work easier, like drag and drop file sharing that works with all the apps you already use, like Jira, Salesforce, Zendesk, and Google Drive, just to name a few. Slack provides integrations with just about every other web-based productivity tool out there, and you can tailor Slack to your work or team with more than 1,000 apps. One of my personal favorites is the Tomato Bot. We're big fans of the Pomodoro method here at Asian Efficiency, and with the Tomato Bot app, I can start and stop Pomodoro timers right in Slack. Slack, where work happens. Learn more at slack.com. That's slack.com. Thanks to Slack for supporting the Productivity Show.
I think the critical number, one of the lessons that I've learned is that this is really the thing that keeps you on track. Because if you view everything through the lens of how does this impact the critical number, it's very easy to say no to things. But when you take your eye off of the critical number and you think about in isolation, should I do this thing, yes or no? You don't have that context of, well, saying yes to this thing really is saying no to this other thing, which, if I'm honest with myself, is more important. So the critical number kind of brings back the focus to the thing that is supposed to be most important. You mentioned in the show notes here, every goal has to be measurable. If you don't have a measurable goal, it's not going to be front of mind. You're not going to be able to track your progress. You're not going to stick with it.
Yeah, it says for those, because obviously you can't see the show notes, for those of you listening, in the show notes, it actually says no measurable goal equals, and then in giant capital letters, bad.
Yep. Yeah. And this is a very tough lesson and something that I just used to struggle with all the time, because sometimes you cannot put something in numbers. So for example, if we wanted to redesign the website and do that in one quarter, like how do you create a critical number around that, right? Or if the annual goal is to say, hey, we want to achieve X amount of revenue dollars, okay, let's break it down in quarters. And we need to identify that the website redesign is going to play an important part of that. Okay, how do we put a number around that? How do we actually quantify what the website redesign does in terms of planning? Like how much resources do we need? How do we make sure that the redesign actually helps achieve the revenue goal? And we also learned that revenue goals are actually very poor goals because they actually don't indicate if you're on track or not. And so coming up with a critical number is actually very difficult. So if you think about, for example, a weight loss example, and I always like to go back to example because it's something that's easy to explain. Let's say your weight loss goal is 150 pounds or something, right? Whether that's lifting something or that's your actual weight, it's a number that you can imagine and it's a number that you can see and spot, right? And you can actually daily keep track of where you are. So whether that's lifting something, you can, you know, lift something today and see, okay, today I lifted 120 pounds, right? So I'm still 30 pounds away, you know, and I'm going to iterate every single week and until I get to 150. And I know then I can, you know, do X, Y, and Z, and it makes me feel X, Y, and Z, whatever, right? Now, same thing with weight loss. Like if you weigh, let's say 180 pounds, you want to get down to 150, you have a critical number, which is 150, and say, okay, what do I need to do every single month or every single quarter so I get down to 150? And then, like you said, Mike, you can then make decisions around that and also say yes and no to certain things when it comes to that. So eating out or traveling to Vegas is probably not going to help you get closer to your goal. So it's easy to say, you know what? I'm going to skip that Vegas trip. I'm going to skip eating out because it's not helping me with my weight loss goal, right? Versus, okay, do I need to increase my intensity working out or multiple times of how often I should work out? Then yes, that's related to the critical goal, right? And, so, and then you have like tangential stuff that might be kind of related, but you have to kind of like justify in your own head that this will help. So for example, you want to spend $150 on a massage so that you can perform better, right? Which is kind of related to the critical goal, but is it really necessary? Like those are some tough decisions that you have to make. And when it comes to business, that's even more difficult. So going back, for example, to our examples that we've had, you know, we've talked about completely redesigning the site, right? So how do you put a critical number around that? Or how does that relate to the annual critical number? Who knows, right? Or redefining or redoing the whole customer area and completely redoing that. Like how do you put a critical number around that? Or creating a new course in one quarter or two quarters? How do you put a critical number around that? And so what I sort of learned is that, okay, first of all, you want to have an annual goal and you want to have a critical number related to that. And then every single quarter, whatever the major initiative is, it has to align with the critical number of the year. And you have to figure out a way to align that. So the mistake that we made, for example, was, well, it's not, I mean, it's kind of a mistake, but we learned something very valuable, which was estimating something conceptual. So for example, when we created Finishes Fastlane, we could actually break down how many story points it took to finish something or to create a whole course, right? And we said, okay, based on our past performances of tracking everything in sprints, it probably takes us, let's say, 300 story points to create a course, right? And we know from tracking everything that in realistic terms, we can probably do 200 story points in one quarter or something like that, right? So we knew way before we even started that we could not finish this course in one quarter. Okay, now that we're realistic about what the gap is and how that is being measured, then we can adjust and say, okay, what's the ideal outcome for this quarter then? Is it, you know, 75% done of the course or like the essentials part or whatever? And so it's just the idea of just measuring something and coming up with a critical number is so easy conceptually, but again, very difficult to execute on and actually implement.
Our dojo, the Asian Efficiencies Dojo, we record this live and people are able to participate with us as we record it. And Nate in the dojo actually has a question based on that, Tan, if you know. Do you know any resources or things that you've found helpful defining what the critical number is? Like, how do you know what your critical number should be? What sort of things drive that?
Can I jump in here real quick? I do want to hear you specifically answer this question, Tan, but one thing that I think kind of goes along with this and a point I want to clarify from something that you just said, Tan, is that you need to identify the things that you're going to do that are going to drive the critical number, but they have to be, we talked about lead versus lag indicators, but we didn't talk about it real explicitly. So you may identify that we want to have 75% of this course done, but when it comes to doing the actual work and moving the needle, when it comes to the critical number, you have to identify the individual tasks or habits, I would say. It's the things, especially on a personal level, like the 12-week year system, which we've got the video course in the dojo, which walks through this whole thing. You know, you got your vision and then you identify your goals and then you identify the habits that you need to do consistently that are going to take you to that point. And I think that that's one area where people can make a mistake is, okay, we've got our critical number, but we don't take it to the next level and think about what are the levers that we can pull that will influence that critical number. That's a different conversation that needs to be had.
Yeah, coming up with a critical number is not easy, and this is something that we struggled. Again, I cannot emphasize that enough. We struggled with this so many times because certain things are just more difficult to come up with in terms of how do you measure something like that. And what really helped us was just, one, keep trying and then executing. And then through trial and error, you'll realize, oh, this is actually a very bad critical number. But the one question that always keeps coming back up is, you know, if we achieve this number, what would this do for us? Or if we achieve this number, we would consider this an extremely successful period, right? And once you start to think about, okay, how do we put something in numbers and then achieve that particular number, it would actually motivate you to then come up with ways to actually like figure out on how to make that happen. So going back to, for example, the courses, as everybody knows, we create online courses for productivity. And how do you measure something like that? So we could have said, you know, and this is kind of like traditional goal setting. You say, okay, by December 31st, I want to have this course completely done. And as you guys know, you know, I'm super rigid when it comes to what's the definition of done? What does that mean?
Yep.
Right? And that in itself is already a bad goal because, okay, what does done actually mean? Is it launched? Does it mean the course material is done? Does it mean it's uploaded online? Does it mean people can buy it?
My skin is crawling just hearing you define it.
Right. So getting very clear on the definition of done is, you know, a huge part of it, right? So once you get clear on that, then you can say, okay, now that I know what my definition of done is, or even planning terms, you could say, you know, what's my definition of success? What's the definition of success for this quarter? And we could say, okay, it's, you know, having launched a course or something, but then how do we measure it every single week so we know if we're actually on track or not? And that's actually the biggest value that I've taken away from understanding the critical number is how can we track on a weekly basis or even a daily basis, whether we're on course or whether we're off course, and how do we make adjustments so that we are back on course and actually achieving our goal? And so, you know, creating a online course, how do I know 2 weeks in if I'm actually on track? It's kind of difficult if you just say, hey, you know, we want to launch a course. It's very difficult to plan that process. And if you listen to our Scrum episode, I always talk about how, you know, the more complexity is involved, the harder it is to plan for something. It's never linear. And it's the same thing here. So how do we use the critical number on a daily basis to measure against that and see if we're on course to get this shipped or if we're actually off par and we need to figure out a way to get back on track? And that's really the value to me of the critical numbers, so we can keep each other in check and see, okay, are we actually making progress or are we going backwards? And if we are going backwards, what do we need to do to change this? So for example, for us, launching a course involves talking to a lot of customers, right? And we knew that launching a course is something we couldn't do in one quarter. It actually takes 2 quarters to do, so 6 months. So we said, okay, definition of success is, you know, we want to have everything done by this quarter and this date, right? again, bad definition of done, which leads to bad, you know, optics, which leads to bad decisions. So we said, okay, you know, we want to have all course materials done by March 31st or something, right? Which is the first quarter. So that's a kind of a bad critical number because, again, you can't really measure that, right? A better version of that is to say, okay, if we have talked to 30 customers in one quarter and have defined the solutions that we need to create, then that would be a better definition of success. And we know exactly, okay, if we've talked to 30 customers and we have the game plan or the issues or the task fully groomed so that we can start executing next quarter, that's a better definition of done or success. And we can work with that. And then what we can do is every single week, we can check in and say, hey, Mike, or hey, Brooks, you know, the critical number for this quarter is 30 customers. How many are we at right now? Oh, we're at zero? Okay. Do we have any people in the pipeline? Are we scheduling calls? No? Okay. Why are we not doing this? Oh, the technology is not working or whatever excuse might come up, right? So then we can make adjustments and say, okay, we need to fix this or do this, you know, so we are back on track. Or maybe we have talked to, you know, 10 people already and we say, oh, great. You know, we were on par. You know, it's only 2 weeks in. We're already talked to 10 customers. Great. Looks like we're going to finish early, which is ideal. But then, you know, as the quarter goes on, you start to figure out, oh, some people have to reschedule. Some people don't show up, you know, and then some people would, you know, rather not talk. And then we have to find new people. Like there's always stuff happening. You just never can predict. Right. And now, you know, one quarter later, we have the data and we can say, okay, 30 was a good number based on the number of people we have in the team and the resources we had available. So next time we launch a new product or a new course, we can say, okay, we can talk to 30 customers in one quarter, right? We have that data point now. And so every single quarter you start to build off on your history and your track record and your performance. And over time, and this is kind of what we've hinted at earlier, the planning process becomes more efficient and becomes more accurate as well.
Yeah. And I also want to clarify something here because I think that this is a really interesting example. So let's talk about your goal is to produce a course, whether you're Asian Efficiency or somebody else. Okay. Your definition of done for that project may be that your course is shipped. But I think it's interesting and worth calling out here. It kind of goes back to like the 1 year goal or even broader, like begin with the end in mind. You don't want to make short-term gains that are going to hurt you in the long term. So one of the adjustments that we've made, and you even have it here in the show notes, is like you don't want to just crank through 20 videos and put out stuff that's not high quality. Because yeah, in the short term, maybe you can check the box that says, you know, you produced 20 videos for this course. But if that course is not as great as it can be, then it's not going to help you in the long run. So we've kind of shifted that. And that's why we do all those customer interviews, because we really want to know what are the things that people are experiencing on a day-to-day basis. And then how do we come up with solutions to those problems, not try to guess and build something and just throw it out there and see if people like it. Because we know who our customer avatar is. We know who our average customer is, and we know how we want to help that person. And that's a little bit different approach to this whole planning process that I wanted to call out, because I think this is something that over the years we've learned and we've started to do a lot better. But I've totally seen a lot of other places, a lot of other instances, I should say. I don't want to say like I've seen other people do it this way. But I think that we are kind of unique in this approach because it is a lot more work to do it that way, but it's worth doing right. And if you understand what your critical number really is and how it fits into the big picture, then it's a lot easier to make sure that you're doing the right things. That's ultimately what you got to do, is you got to figure out what the right things are and then do them consistently.
Yeah, and that's one thing you need to be careful of when you're doing this critical number is think of the behaviors that are going to come from that. Because people will always, at the end of the day, people are always going to do what they are measured against. So if somebody's goal is, you, like we said, you have to make 20 videos, you need to make sure that they're not just busting out 20 poor quality videos. So or at least you need to be aware that that could happen. So you need to be on top of that and watching it, especially when people have, say, bonuses tied to certain critical numbers or their contribution towards critical numbers, whatever critical number you're coming up with, think of all of the what might be the downside of that. So you're managing that as well.
And one thing that I want the listener really to understand and walk away with is that every single piece of advice that you hear, whether that's from us or from other podcasts or courses or other resources, you always have to understand the context. And so what I mean with this is, you know, in our case, shipping 20 videos is probably not a good goal. But for somebody who has never launched a course, this could be a fantastic goal because it allows you to then say, okay, you know what, screw it. I'm going to create it. I'm going to ship it. It's maybe not the best thing I've ever created, but it's done. And then this is something that's going to give me momentum, confidence, and this is actually going to launch my business, right? So again, in that sense, that could be a great goal. But in our case, you know, we actually have a lot more to lose. We have, you know, thousands of customers. And if we put out 20 poor videos, we would kill ourselves, right? So you always want to take every single thing you hear and filter through your own context. And one thing I would love to hear from you, Brooks, because you were the genius behind this when we launched Finisher's Fastlane, our course on how to focus and stay consistent on achieving your goals. You were the one who really figured out, like, could we actually launch this in one quarter? Like, you were planning in terms of, like, okay, this is the number of story points that we think it's going to take to launch this. This is the number of people leaving. And can you kind of explain the process and kind of share, like, the nitty gritty details of what it would take for a high fact finder like yourself to plan this whole thing and say, okay, team, we can actually do this. Yes or no?
Yeah, right. Well, and this is something, and this actually happened right there in the room when we were doing our quarterly planning, is we were trying to figure out what we could do. And we knew we wanted to ideally get this launch. So what we did is we took the, because we use Scrum, we kind of took we figured out how many story points we thought each video and everything we needed to do. So we kind of looked at what are all the things that we needed to do, and about how much would each of those, and we were using story points as our measure. You might use something else, but that's what we decided to do. So we looked at all the things that needed to be done and about how much work it was. And then we looked at, okay, here is the amount of time we have to do it. Here are the people on the team that are able to contribute to this. And this was a situation which is a great use of this type of planning, is we realize we're going to need some help. So we were able to actually give other members of the team who didn't usually contribute to this sort of thing. This led to them having a lot more experience because we realized we were going to need their help. So we looked at, okay, these are the resources we have. These are the resources we can bring in from other areas of the company. And these are when people are going to be away. And then we kind of matched it up. And then that's how we went through and we planned for that particular quarter, what we would be able to do with the resources we had. And that was actually a really useful exercise, because if we just looked at the list of stuff we needed to do and thought, oh yeah, we can do that, some of those things might not have been possible because of, you know, maybe I was going on vacation for 3 weeks or something like that. But if we didn't go through that whole thing, we never would have known.
Yeah, that kind of leads into the next point you've got here. So you've got the critical number. You also need to understand where you are now, and you have to really have the context for all of these things when you're planning your quarter. Nate had mentioned in the podcast channel in the Dojo Slack that he loved your disclaimer, and I'm glad that you made that, Tan, because I think it is really important to look at the leading indicators or the things that you're going to do through the right lens. Because like you said, it may be totally appropriate depending on your situation, but completely inappropriate for us based on our situation. So you really need to understand how these things all tie together.
Yeah, and one thing that's kind of helped me understand how important the critical number is through use of a sports analogy. So when you think about the critical number, you can think of it as a scoreboard. And At Agent Efficiency, we actually have a scoreboard in Confluence on the right sidebar, and it gets updated every single day in HipChat, where we all hang out and communicate with our daily number, like our daily critical number, because it's a reminder of where we're at and what we're working towards and what we need to do in between to make sure we're on track. And if we're behind or if we're on pace. And if you think about any sport has a scoreboard, right? So if you take, for example, a basketball as an example, you have a scoreboard. You have two teams. They have certain number of points on the board. And there's a time that indicates how much time there's left, right? The clock says, oh, there's 2 minutes left, 5 minutes left, 12 minutes left. And so everything is defined within the rules. Like there's rules to the game to that. And the critical number is kind of like your current status, right? So the current number of points. But then you have to kind of compare to what you're working with as well. So when you have a game, and let's say your strategy is to shoot a three-pointer because you think that's going to win the game, well, that doesn't really make sense if the scoreboard says that you have 5 minutes left and you're up by 2 points. Like, that's totally counterintuitive, right? Like, you wouldn't take a low percentage shot to get up 3 points while you're already ahead by 2 points or multiple points and you have 5 minutes left. Like, that doesn't make any sense, right? Whereas if you're behind by 2 points and there's only 2 seconds left, well, then taking the three-point shot makes sense because it could win the game. And in that particular moment, that's the right strategy, right? So my point is the critical number allows you to make adjustments and come up with the right strategy and the right tactics to make sure that you're on track to hitting the outcome or achieving what you want to achieve. And without having the scoreboard in place, it's just very difficult to make adjustments along the way. And I'm seeing this already in this quarter, because we're a little bit behind in terms of what our critical number is for the quarter. And I'm already seeing like, oh, you know, 2 weeks in, we're actually already behind. We actually need to get our behinds move in and start implementing some of the stuff. So it changes what we actually would do next sprint and the sprint after that and what we're going to focus on and what we need to sacrifice and what we need to do differently. Because I'm seeing already 2 weeks in, oh, we're actually way behind than what we anticipated for. So let's make adjustments as needed. So we have that scoreboard in place, right? So to me, that's like one of the biggest values of coming up with the critical number and then checking in regularly. And it's one of the reasons I wanted to have this visual scoreboard updated every single day, because it just reminded me of saying, oh, Tian, you're on point or you're way behind. We need to get moving.
One thing I wanted to say about that scoreboard being visual too is it makes a huge difference, because at first it was just a number, and you know, you see a number and maybe there's a context about like you're X percent towards your goal and you think, okay, well, that's pretty good. But when it's visual and you can see the trends, then it really hits home. Then you really realize, oh man, we gotta get going on this. Or the opposite way, oh, this momentum we're making is awesome. Let's double down. So the visual aspect of it, if you're able to do it, is super, super helpful.
Yeah, I like the visual aspect of it, definitely. I do want to talk a little bit more about the sports ball analogy, because I think it's so appropriate. You know, when you have the score and how much time is left, like you said, it's going to impact your strategy. You're not trying to win the quarter. You're trying to win the game. And so even LeBron, as much as he doesn't want to sit, you know, he's going to have to take a rest. But you don't want Tristan Thompson on the floor when your team is down three, taking that last shot. You want to put people in positions where they can be successful. And so the critical number, the scoreboard, in essence, without that information, like, you really are just shooting in the dark when it comes to your strategy. It's almost like putting people out on the court and just not being able to see what the other team is doing.
So many puns intended.
All right. So once you have that critical number, you had talked about how you know where you want to get to, then what you need to do is figure out how to close that gap. Do you have what you need in order to close that gap, whether it be in one quarter or multiple quarters? Do you want to give us some examples of that, Tan?
Yeah. So once you have your critical number for the year, assuming you made it through and you figured out, oh, this is the number we're shooting for, then you want to start breaking it down and say, okay, how do we break this down into quarters? And the best way to do that is actually to do something else, which is, where are we right now? So let's say, you know, your goal is to lose or to weigh 150 pounds, right? And that is your goal for the next 12 months. Well, your strategy is going to be very different if you weigh 300 pounds versus 160 pounds, right? If you weigh 300 pounds, you have to lose another 150 pounds. So your strategy is going to be very different versus somebody who weighs 160 pounds because that person only has to lose 10 pounds and has a whole year to do it. So you have to really understand, where are you right now and how can you put it in numbers as well? So then you can see, okay, what's the difference or what's the gap? And how do we then break that down into reasonable, achievable outcomes that we can work on every single quarter, right? So if we take the weight loss example again and say, okay, we have to lose 150 pounds. You know, you could say, okay, 150 divided by four is 42 and a half. I want to make sure I lose that amount of weight every single quarter. You know, that's a good starting point. And honestly, most of the time when you first start, everything is going to be a guess. And you won't really know what's realistic or what's achievable until you actually get started and you start making some momentum stuff happening. And what we see over and over and over again is usually the first time you do something, everything's going to be slow. But then the more you do it, the faster you get at it and the more efficient the process becomes as well. Right. So, for example, every single week I'm hosting a dinner party here with my friend Tim. And in the beginning, it was really slow. We had to set up the table. We had to clean the place. We have to clean the silverware. We have to set everything up. It just took us like 4 or 5 hours just to get everything ready. And now, like a couple of weeks later, we pretty much just have to show up because now we fine-tune the systems, we figure out where everything belongs, how everything goes, and we have some help of other people as well putting stuff together. And that process got really efficient. And the same thing is going to happen with your goals. The first time you start executing, it's going to be really slow and you're going to, you know, figure stuff out as you go. And then by the time the second quarter starts, assuming it's the same thing you're working on, you're going to get much more efficient at it. Your body's going to be more efficient at losing weight, and all these other processes that you're trying to figure out are just going to be more effective over time as well. So don't feel discouraged as you get started where it might be a little bit slow. It's totally normal, but you have to really understand what is your current reality. Because if you don't know what the current reality is, it's just really difficult to start executing and closing that gap. And it's kind of like the sports analogy again. If you're 50 points behind, your strategy is going to be way different than if you're 2 points behind, right? And then also limiting the number of minutes that we have left in the game and so on, right? So you really have to understand, where are we right now? And I think that's a step that you don't see often discussed, especially in personal growth books, personal development books. And this is something I realized from doing scaling up and kind of figuring out where we are right now, what we need to do, that actually that would actually be very beneficial if you do that for our personal lives as well. So that's something I've taken from this framework and start to apply to my own life.
I want to put a shout out here for another course in the dojo, which is the journaling module that Brandon had put together, because he talks about a concept which I really love and I've mentioned it over and over again, but the gap versus the gain. When you journal, you have a chronicle of where you were and where you are now, so you can look at how far you've come instead of just looking at that ideal future and being frustrated that you're never getting there. But really, I think that they're both important aspects to this quarterly planning process. So you do need to know whether the things that you did last quarter are moving you in the right direction, but then also you need to know where you need to get, and balancing those things, I think, is important. We talk at length, by the way, about the personal side of this in that 12-week year training course, which is in the dojo as well. So a lot of the concepts that we've talked about here, if you wanted to apply this on a personal level, that's the place to go. I know that the scaling up book is a great resource, and we'll include links to all of this stuff in the show notes. I am curious though here, I mean, we've been going for a while, but I want to touch on some of these other things that you had mentioned in the show notes here, Tan. You mentioned that planning is 50% of the work. I think that this definitely deserves some discussion. Can you explain why planning is so important? Why should people do this anyways?
Part of me is very nitty gritty when it comes to, I want to know exactly where we are right now and how we're going to make the outcome happen. And planning is just, I honestly don't know how you would achieve a goal without planning something. And I have friends who are actually experts at not planning at all and still achieving their goal. But then when I look at their lives, I think, oh man, this is way too crazy for me in terms of like crises, emergencies, booking things last minute, doing things last minute. And it's just not the life that I want to live.
Yeah. So to jump in here, like the point that people would use to argue this is that, well, it's not going to go according to plan anyway. So what's the point? You know, those emergencies are going to come up and I can't do anything about them. So why Yep. should I create a plan that's just going to get destroyed?
That is a fair argument. And my counter argument to that would be when you plan, you increase your chances of actually succeeding. And the example that Brooks gave earlier was a good example and a good reminder for me as well, is we actually planned that we could achieve a certain goal. And if we didn't plan at all and we just said, hey, this is what we're going to do, we could have still achieved the goal without planning it. But what it might look like is to say, okay, it's going to be extremely stressful. You know, 2 weeks until the deadline, we have to like pull all-nighters. Mike, I'm going to have to tell you that you're not going to take that vacation. Brooks, you know, that soccer practice you're going to go to? No, that's not going to happen. No, you can't go to that because we need to finish this thing. And, you know, a lot of companies operate like that and a lot of teams operate like that. And that's totally fine. You know, if that's part of their culture and that's part of, you know, how they do things, great. You know, nothing against that. The way I like to run things is, you know, I want to hit this goal and I want to make sure that I can do it in a way where I'm still committed. You know, I'm still going to put in my hours, my work, but I also want it to be stress-free as possible. And that's where planning really comes in, is to be able to say, okay, can we actually realistically achieve this? And we've had many quarters and many situations, even inside sprints, as you guys know, where we said, okay, we're going to do all of this stuff in a sprint. And, you know, I'm sure Mike, you can testify to that. Sometimes that's extremely stressful, right? And as the CEO, like big part of your role is, you know, keeping people motivated, managing people, making sure everybody's on point and happy. And if I see people getting burned out, you know, after 2 weeks of work, like the next 2 weeks are going to be super poor as well, right? Which is going to lead to many different things, usually bad things. So I like to keep things as stress-free as possible so that when we do have emergencies or things that come up, it's truly unpredictable. But, you know, with my thinking time and you guys' thinking time, I want to identify those roadblocks as much as we can in advance so that we have time and space to operate if we need to address it, but also say, you know, our chances of succeeding is like 90%, right? I would rather go into a year or a quarter and say, you know, I know with 90% certainty that we're going to achieve this than to say, okay, we're going to start this quarter. I have no idea if we're going to do it, but we're going to make it happen somehow.
Yeah. Brooks, you want to speak to the idea of thinking time?
Yeah, that's something that we've really started implementing, and we have that module in the dojo about it. And this is something where you're not focusing on the initial stuff right in front of you. You're asking yourself ideally one question, getting back to that one thing, and you're taking it. What we've started doing as a quote unquote management team is having it at least once a week. I know Tan does a lot more than that, and I'm not sure about you, Mike, but I'm kind of working up as much as
I'm
can.
Getting there.
Yeah, but it's just you know, disconnecting, going to ideally a different location, and just tackling a hard problem, a hard question, and focusing on all the things that you can do to what could come up, what's going to come up, what do you need to do about it, and then a plan for how you're going to actually take action on these things. So yeah, that's something that I suspect, I mean, this is just kind of a beginning thing, but I suspect as we're getting more into this as a team, it's going to bleed into our quarterly planning as well, because I think there's going to be a lot of higher level stuff also that we bring up that we hadn't even thought of before.
Yeah, I think it already is. I mean, the last quarterly planning, Tan, you had asked everybody in the company to identify what are the things that Asian Efficiency should start doing, stop doing, and keep doing. And then we went over all of them. They were anonymous, although you could tell which ones were mine because they were very detailed and very lengthy. But it's something that, you know, it's a big driver of that 50% for planning that I think is worth calling out. So 50% of your time on planning doesn't mean that you're spending 50% of your time fiddling with your projects inside of your task manager or your 50% of your time creating things in Jira or Basecamp or whatever tool you're going to use. But it's 50% of your time thinking about the real problems that you're trying to solve and making sure that you are you're presenting the best solutions possible when it comes time to do the actual work. This is, again, a big mistake I think a lot of people make, is they kind of assume what they need to be working on. They don't think it all the way through, and then they do the work, and then you realize after the fact, oh, that really didn't make that big of an impact. And so I want to call that out for our listeners so they don't waste an entire quarter doing something that's really not going to provide any benefit.
Yeah, this is a quote by Keith Cunningham that's my friend Tim always brings up with me because he sees this over and over again with his consulting clients. And there's nothing worse than enthusiastically going into the wrong direction. Like, you could be totally excited, do amazing things, but if you're doing the wrong thing, well, guess what? It's still not worth anything. It has no business value whatsoever. So skipping the planning process is a very dangerous thing when it comes to that, because you could easily do things that just have no value whatsoever and be very excited about it and spend a time and money and time and resources into it. And I see this, for example, with people all the time when it comes to writing a book. People love writing books, and I think it's one of the most noble things you can do. But there's also a place and time for writing a book as well. And I've seen so many people write a book when it's actually not the right time to write a book, because there are so many other different things that they really need to do for their business instead of writing a book. And so they write the book and they're super passionate about it, and then the book is released and then crickets, nothing comes, because they didn't think through about the marketing, the speaking engagements that come with that. They didn't think about all this other stuff. And so the book is out there, right? Which is great. But then what happens after that, you know? Did you really think about what you're going to do to launch the book, to like monetize it somehow, to reach it to or get it in as many people's hands as you can? Did you consider all the time commitments that come with after launching the book, like speaking and traveling? Like, how does this affect your current business or your current job? You know, and like, I'm just bringing up simple questions right now, but it's like stuff that could easily have been prevented. And you could spend a whole year, not wasting a year, because writing a book, again, I think is a very noble thing. But if it's not the right timing, like, that's a big part of figuring out what the right plan is as well. Is like, is the timing correct for this as well, right? And going back to what you said earlier to counter your argument, Mike, about like, okay, if nothing is going to go to plan anyway, like, why would you do it? Well, something that we've realized is from doing the planning every single quarter, we can take insights and lessons learned from every single time that we planned and make it better for in the future. And what that has resulted in is that every single time we plan now, we're getting a little bit more accurate, a little bit better at achieving our goals, setting realistic goals, and actually executing what we know what we can do. And every planning process just becomes better and better and better. And if I didn't plan at all, I would never have this information, this reference experience, this data point to say, okay, can we actually do this or not? Right. So for example, planning that course launch, and having done it multiple times now, next time when we launch a course, I'm pretty confident that we can launch a course in 6 months now. Like, we've done it before. We know what the numbers look like in terms of resources and what it takes, number of people, skills gap. I'm actually pretty confident we can do it in 4 months now, or maybe even three, because we have multiple people now, all with different skills that can help and contribute. And, you know, am I always going to be accurate? No. But having that historical data and this reference experience allows us to say, oh, you know what, this is going to be accurate or no, Tian or Mike or Brooks, like, I don't think that's going to work based on what we've done in the past. So again, this goes back to the whole idea of, you know, if you plan whether that's actually going to come true or not, you just increase the likelihood of success.
Yeah, that's really good. It's probably a good place to end. Before we go, maybe let's give some examples of lessons that we've learned from our own quarterly planning process. So we'll each maybe offer one of these, and this would be kind of the three big things. If you were to distill down this episode, these are the three things, the three major themes of what we've talked about today, it sounds like. So Brooks, you want to go first?
Sure. So for me, thinking about the lessons learned as I've gone through the quarterly planning process that we've had, one of them is to take into account the impact of adding participants. So for example, when I first started doing it, I'm sure it slowed everything down because you know, you guys had your rhythm, but then you had to explain things and it would have just been different. And but then once the three of us got up to speed, like we said earlier, it just kind of flies by. We walk in, sit down, and go. We have it. But then there was a while we had a fourth person there too, and it was great. You know, more participants or adding a participant gave more insights. It was totally she thought a different way than we did, so that type of thing was great, but it did take more time, and I'm sure over time it would have, you know, synced in and sped up a lot. But when you're going through your process, you need to make sure to take into account that impact of adding participants, both good and to work in the slow down a little bit.
Yeah, and actually that touches on a question that Nate had asked earlier in the Slack team. I'm curious, Tan, Nate had asked if there was an upper limit on how many people you would consider doing quarterly planning for. He threw out numbers of 50 and 100, but in your own mind, I guess, is there a maximum number of people you would want to gather for the quarterly planning process?
Ooh, I honestly don't know, so I'm going to cross that bridge when I get there.
Sure. Yeah, it just reminded me of it when Brooks was talking about, you know, you're right that every single participant that you add to the quarterly planning process adds additional complexity and also more time when you are talking about things, but also the end product is going to be more complete as well, more perspectives again. My big lesson was one that happened recently. I shared it in this episode, but the more you can focus, the better off you are. Less big rocks equals more progress made. And I use that term big rocks. I know Stephen Covey has used it, but that's also the term that Vern Harnish uses in scaling up. So you identify your big rocks, and really with our small team, it's more effective for us to focus on that one rock and that one critical number and just go as hard as we can after that thing rather than splitting up our efforts. When we divert our focus, it's kind of like multitasking in a sense where you add all the things up and it doesn't equal the sum of all the parts. It's significantly less than if you were just going towards that one thing, and then once you achieve it, then you can switch and do something else.
Yeah, that was a big takeaway for me too. And again, the concept is so simple, but it's just very difficult to execute. And even knowing that the fewer rocks you have, the more progress you make, is just I still despise myself, even though knowing all of this that we didn't do it earlier. So I'm glad we're doing it now. So my big takeaway, obviously, I had to have something different here, but I think it's still the biggest one for me personally, which is the whole idea of coming up with a critical number. And it's such a difficult concept to execute on, even though it's simple in theory. But just coming up with a critical number is one of the best things you can do because, again, going back to the sports analogy, you want to keep track of where you are right now and change your tactics and strategy based on what the gap is and where you need to go. So coming up with that is so critical. And it's, again, not easy. And you're going to make mistakes. And we've done it, you know, multiple times. You're going to do stuff that doesn't make any sense to the critical number. You're going to do stuff that the critical number is super unrealistic. You're going to do stuff like coming up with a bad critical number, and that's not going to make any difference at all. Like, we've made all those mistakes over the past couple of years. So don't feel bad if you figure out that, you know, first couple of times you do it, it's totally wrong or off the path, and that's totally fine. We've been there, you know, we're still improving our process as well. But I hope that sharing some of the stuff that we've done helps you kind of shortcut the process.
If you want to increase your success rate for achieving your goals, then I want to invite you to go through the 12-week year training videos that we have inside the dojo. We'll show you step-by-step how to create a vision for yourself, set realistic goals, and execute on them on a quarterly basis. As you've learned today, planning is wildly important, and this is the best training videos available today to help you with that, and they're all inside the dojo. Now, here's the best part. You can get access to everything the dojo has to offer, not just the 12-week year training videos, for only $1 for your first month. But this offer is just for podcast listeners, so if you want to take advantage of a special offer, you have to go to theproductivityshow.com/dojo. You'll get access to the entire dojo, including the entire private video training library, the community, which can help hold you accountable for reaching your goals, and direct access to myself, Marmel, Brooks, Tan, and the rest of the Asian Efficiency team. But that special $1 for your first month offer is only available at theproductivityshow.com/dojo. Again, that URL is theproductivityshow.com/dojo. You can also find links to everything we discussed today in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/200. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving us a review in iTunes or a star in Overcast. The show is on Twitter as @productivityfm. And if you want to get your questions answered and get mentioned on the show, you can send us a tweet with the hashtag AskTPS. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next Productive Monday.